too long. I'm going to introduce our first speaker of the night, Antonia Juhas. She is a program director with the International Forum on Globalization, organizing around the environment and around issues of free trade. And she spent a number of years in Washington, D.C. before coming to California at American Lands working on the same issues. She played a core role in the efforts to stop the Global Free Logging Agreement that was a part of the World Trade Organization and is continuing her efforts here. So give her a round of applause.
Hi, welcome everyone. Can you hear me without the microphone?
Yeah.
Can I encourage folks to come in? There's lots of room up front where you can sit. There's plenty of room, so come on in. One more note on the list there on the wall. If you don't see something that you think really should be there, come and join us and start that group. It's a totally inclusive group that knows there's lots of room to grow, and we'd like you to help us grow and reach out as we should. And there really is a lot of room up here, so please come in. This sheet that's coming around is a six-pager that I did on the free trade area, the Americas, and water. My focus in this introduction is going to be on the nuts and bolts of the agreement. I actually don't handle environment for the IFG. That's Victor, my colleague. I handle water. And then the other things I work on are alternative models of globalization, primarily, which I encourage folks to ask me about in our breakout session, and working with the media. But like I said, my focus here is going to be on the nuts and bolts. And another thing that I have only a few of here, so please only take if you need it. Oh, and the same with the six-pager. There aren't enough, so if you've already got it, please don't take one. And if you can share with someone, please share. And on this book, it's a great book on the FTA. We have limited supply right now, but we'll have more, so ask me about it if you really, really want one. Okay. So, the nuts and bolts of the free trade area of the Americas. The most important things to understand about the free trade area of the Americas are that it's nothing new if you've been following this movement for any period of time, particularly if you've just sat here and watched this video. It's the expansion of the North American Free Trade Agreement is what most people will say, but it most definitely doesn't start there. The Free Trade Area of the Americas began being negotiated in 1994 at the same time the North American Free Trade Agreement was signed, but it was an idea of Daddy Bush, and he wanted to see a free trade area extend all the way from Alaska to the end of the Caribbean, except, of course, for Cuba, because they're not a democracy, and we don't want them to benefit from our favorable deals. And the idea was to take all these great ideas that we learned in the North American Free Trade Agreement, but then add ideas that were starting to percolate that eventually were formed into something called the World Trade Organization, which was created in 1995. So you've got the ideas of the North American Free Trade Agreement. You add in the ideas of the World Trade Organization. This is the initial ideas. Toss that up and throw it onto Canada, the United States, Central and South America, and the Caribbean, where particularly in Central and South America and the Caribbean, you've already got the programs of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. These are the structural adjustment programs that a lot of us have been talking a lot about for a very long time, which basically locked in many of these countries into economic liberalization programs, which is what they're called, economic liberalization, trade liberalization, which is essentially saying, open up your markets, open up your resources to us. And us is, at that time, mostly North American multinational corporations, but also European multinational corporations and some others, and saying, open up all your laws, open up all your resources, let us in, let us take stuff, we'll take stuff, we'll pay you for it, you'll get that money, it'll make you all rich, then you'll be just like us, and we'll all be equal and everything will work out really well. What that basically is, and it's not a surprise that these institutions like NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, and the World Trade Organization came in 1994 and 1995. The ideas are really pushed by the idea of Reaganomics Thatcherism, the idea of a rising tide lifting all boats, meaning if you deregulate, if you open up everything for corporations, a few people will make a lot of money. And as they make a lot of money, that money will trickle down to the rest of society, and then everybody will make more money, and we'll all do better. That is, in obviously layperson's terms, but not simplified, I mean, it's just a simplification, that is the economic argument that explains all of these ideas. It is neoliberal economic dogma. It is the heart of the World Bank. It is the heart of the International Monetary Fund. It is the heart of the North American Free Trade Agreement. It is the heart of the World Trade Organization. It is the heart of Reaganomics. And it's the heart of Baby Bush, much more so than Daddy Bush. Baby Bush is pushing this stuff with aggressivity that his daddy only wishes he had. And if you understand that, you understand all this. So the free trade area of the America is all of these things rolled into one, whoosh, laid out on the, what would be the largest free trade area in the world. Now, the idea began in 94, but it didn't really get solidified until 98. It's really being pushed for now, really in a way it hasn't been before. The reason why it's really being pushed for now, and this is very true, to get it done by maybe 2003, but if Brazil has its way, not till 2005, is because we're winning, and they know this is their last chance to get a regional trade deal. It's their last chance to do anything beyond bilaterals, one country with one other country. The idea was that we would have, starting with the North American Free Trade Agreement, that was only three countries, the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, we'd start having these global trade deals, that the world was moving in a way that everyone believed this dogma. We believed that if corporations had access to our markets in every which way, if we stopped restraining them with our silly environmental laws and our silly labor protections, and we stopped caring about things like human rights, then the market would work as it should, and eventually we'd make so much money that we'd have enough money to care about our environment. And we'd have enough money to care about labor. This is the argument, that once you've got that money, you can turn around and replant those redwoods that are now gone, and revive all those dead people you killed. We'll create all sorts of... Oh, we can, right? We have genetic... What's it called? You create babies from copying dollies. Cloning! That's it. I don't know a lot about that. Okay, we can do it. Cloning. It already exists. So we can kill as many people we want in the process because we've got cloning. But this really is the idea. This is the logic. Obviously, it doesn't work. One main reason why it doesn't work is that the trade agreements also lock in very specific laws. It's not free trade at all. It creates a free environment for corporations, and it dramatically restricts the ability of governments and citizens to do the things they want to do and protect the things they want to protect and constrain the activities in corporations so that their activities are forced to benefit people, communities, the environment, and labor. So the rules are very specific in that they give corporations very particular rights, very particular access. An important thing to note about the free trade area of the Americas is that it goes farther than any other agreement thus far, not only in the area that it covers, but basically, as I said, it starts with NAFTA, but it takes all the ideas that have grown since then, first the ones from the World Trade Organization, but then other ideas that have been tried by corporations and have failed, such as the Multilateral Agreement on Investment. Who recognizes that? Okay, a few people. This was an international investment deal that this community, the anti-globalization movement, stopped dead in its tracks through global activism. That was an idea of an international investment agreement that would lock in a few provisions that already exist in NAFTA, the most important being that an individual investor, a corporation, can sue a government directly. Okay, I'm the Ethel Corporation of the United States. I don't like a law that Canada passes. I go to Canada, I knock on the door, and I say, have you read this thing called NAFTA? You can't pass that law. I'm sorry. Get rid of it. And Canada says, oh, gosh, you're right. And they get rid of it. That's how it works. The individual corporations get to sue governments to enforce the laws of the agreement. This would have been expanded in the Multilateral Agreement on Investment to at least the 26 countries that are the wealthiest countries in the world. But the first attempt was to include it in the World Trade Organization. That was also stopped dead in its tracks. Then they tried to do that again in Seattle, stopped dead in its tracks. Now they're trying to get it into the Free Trade Area of the Americas. But like I said, NAFTA has some of these provisions, but the Multilateral Agreement on Investment tried to expand upon them. Also, there's something in the World Trade Organization that liberalizes services. Services mean just what it sounds like, government services. Anything that governments do, education, social services, the provision of water, the provision of energy. Before GATS, the General Agreement on the Trade and Services at the World Trade Organization, governments agreed that social services were a fundamental citizen right that should not be included in trade agreements, and they weren't. We had something called GATS at the World Trade Organization that's being negotiated. That's going to be put into the Free Trade Area of the Americas and expanded upon. The investor provisions of the North American Free Trade Agreement put into the FTAA and expanded upon. Competition policies that have been negotiated elsewhere put into the FTAA and expanded upon. You get the idea. They're going to take all these ideas that have been brewing, some exist elsewhere, some are just ideas, throw them into the FTAA because they know it's their last gasp. And they can set the precedent there on an enormous trade region so that these rules can then be applied everywhere. This is the big free-for-all. Not to mention, in the United States, we've got a president that's saying, business, you know, show me your damnedest, because there's no breaks. You know, so there's a law, we'll rescind it. So I made a campaign pledge, I'll go back on it. And just let's throw it all into the FTAA. So the services is one of the key provisions that I want to touch on really quickly, because one of the things that we care about is water. Water services means literally how you get the water in your tap. The reason why corporations want trade deals, the reason why they exist, is so they can get the rights to own and provide services that they can make money off of. So water services are predicted in 1 year's time, the next year, to make at least $1 trillion. Education services, the provision, private provision of education, at least $2 trillion. The private provision of healthcare, $3.5 trillion. So corporations want to have ownership of these services. They want to make money off of them. Water, obviously, demand is dramatically outstripping supply. They can gain ownership of not only the water itself, but the provision of it. There's a hell of a lot of money to be made. So they're using trade agreements to do that. One example is through NAFTA. One of the very first NAFTA cases was a California company sued British Columbia because they had a contract to export water from British Columbia. They were going to export, take a bunch of money, take a bunch of water in a tanker, carry it to China, which has a free trade zone, so they could use the cheap labor to turn the water into bottled water and then sell it back to developed countries. Well, the citizens of British Columbia, when they found out about this contract, they said, whoa, no, you can't export our water, you can't do that. So they banned the export of water, which makes a lot of sense. Well, Sunbelt, the corporation, turned to NAFTA, and they said, you signed a contract. You can't suddenly decide you're not going to do it. It doesn't matter that you suddenly realized, one, what the contract was for, two, that your citizens didn't know about it, three, that you never looked at the environmental implications, that you never looked at the labor implications. None of that matters. You signed an agreement. You owe us $220 million. Now, what Sunbelt wants is not the $220 million. That's pittance. They want to get rid of the export ban. They want to force the Canadians to change their laws. And that's what the precedent is. The example I mentioned before, the Ethyl Corporation of Virginia has this dirty chemical. It's a gasoline additive. It causes cancer. The Canadians banned the transport of it, which essentially meant banning it. No, it's a different... MTB is a sister of... Let's call it a brother because it's bad. A brother of... MMT. Sorry. Okay. Anyway. I was choosing which gender and I got confused. The sibling. MMT. This was the original case. MTBE is another one. MMT was in Canada. The Canadians banned it. It's bad for the environment. We don't like it. It causes cancer. Ethyl Corporation went to them and they said, not it doesn't cause cancer, but just you can't ban it. And the Canadians said, okay, you're right. If we push this, we'll lose it. We'll lose the case at NAFTA, so we'll settle with you. We'll give you $13 million. Part of the suit was over the debate in the Canadian Parliament over whether to pass the law. Think of what that means for the process of democracy. The suit was over the debate in the Parliament. The Canadians wrote a letter that said, you're right, MMT is just fine here. And they gave them $13 million, dropped the law. That's the end. So when people ask me, this is the first question I always get, why do governments sign these things? Why on earth would they sign them? Okay. Well, if they're going to lose their laws, you think that would be crazy. Why do they sign them? Because the people who benefit have been historically the only people who pay any attention to these agreements, and that's the corporations. Only now have we started to change that so that governments see that everybody is paying attention and they can no longer count on these agreements, and the FTA is the last gasp. Am I over? So I'm going to make one more point. Okay, I'm at time, so I'm going to make one more point that I'd like us to talk about in the discussion session. Fast Track is the legislative vehicle through which the Free Trade Area of the Americas would go through Congress. Please ask me more about that, or please other speakers talk about it. And fight it. Please, everybody, fight it. And if you have lots and lots of questions and discussion, please come to my breakout session. Thank you.